lot of soul.
This is Bass Talk Live. Your host, Mark Jeffries and Matt Pangrack. BTL is brought to you by Lowrance. Strike King Lures, Bass Cat Boats, Ducket Fishing, Spro, AFCO, Big Bite Baits, Sunline, and TH Marine. BTL coming at you.
Good Tuesday, everybody. Welcome once again to another edition of BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. And Matthew, we have a winner.
For the auction.
Yeah.
The Bass Fishing Hall of Fame auction.
I just received the email.
Okay. Are you allowed to announce it? Or
I don't know.
We'll just keep it under wraps for now.
He's from your home state.
He is fairly close to where I grew up.
Do you know him?
I don't know. He literally told me 2 seconds beforehand.
I just found out.
So that's cool.
So we're excited. His first name is John, and we're excited to have John in the studio and out on the water with Matthew, crappie fishing, bass fishing, whatever. And then hopefully he likes beer and pizza and a little bowling. The evening after he spends a little time on the water with you. So congratulations, John. We'll try and get him on the show.
Twice then.
Yeah. Before. Yeah. Just to talk about what he's looking forward to and everything else. All right. Good show today. We're going to continue focusing on the local, regional, non-professional anglers today. We're going to have Nick Trim on, and he was the Super Tournament winner out of La Crosse on the Mississippi River. And, dude, did you see the press release? Did you see what he did the entire tournament?
No, I was looking at his stats. He's a seasoned BFL angler.
Yeah.
Take
a guess what he did.
The frog?
No.
Top Carolina rig.
No. It wasn't a Carolina rig.
Hold on. I'm reading. Oh, he threw a spook.
Yes.
Every fish I weighed came on a Hedden Zara spook.
Yeah.
And he had 10 bass for 34.9. Now, I'm interested in seeing how Nick got this stuff done, because remember, there were some multiple professional tournaments on La Crosse prior to this event. So I want to know how he looked at those professional tournaments and if that played into his game plan at all, or if he was just like, no, dude, I fish this every single year. So.
So we'll get him on here in about 15, 20 minutes. And kind of dive into his super tournament event. All right. If you didn't listen to yesterday's show, let me just kind of go back a minute. Matt talked a lot, and I thought about this yesterday during my windshield time going back and forth to school. Matt talked about how rough the water was. All right. Remember you said you speared one. You took one over. Let me ask you this, right? Because I want to continue on this. How well, right, and this is not a reflection on Matt or anything, or Mercury or Basscat or anything like that, but seriously, how well do you think you have that boat set up for rough water? Do you think that you have it dialed in to perform at its peak based upon rough water?
No, I know that I don't.
All right, and we've never talked about this on the show. Have we ever had a guest on to talk about boat setups and props and all this stuff and everything?
That's my decision not to have it set up that way, because I go with the three blade, and I know that the Lynx is a heavy boat, and that it doesn't get out of the hole as quick or have as much grip with the three blade, but I gain 2 or 3 miles an hour on it. So I could have had a four blade on that.
Yeah.
And my mount setups up front, I could have had reinforced. Now, nothing happened. Nothing broke.
Right.
I've got the two mount setups, but they moved around.
So I was thinking, there is somebody that we both know that knows. He knows a lot, dude, especially when it comes to setting up boats.
And Frank back on?
Yeah. Yeah, you're all over it. You were reading my mind. So next Monday, I called Frank. I'm talking about Frank Scalish. All right. I called Frank, and Frank is going to make a return to PTL on Monday. And we're going to catch up on some other stuff and everything. But we're also going to talk about setting boats up for rough water. And in fact, just setting your boat up for whatever situation that you're going to deal with based upon the conditions that can be expected. And we've never done that on PTL. And what a better person than to get Frank on and just kind of set things up, and you guys can ask questions, and we can talk about running in rough water. Good idea?
It's a great idea. It's one of those things that you can go maybe 2 or 3 years and not even need it or think about it.
Yeah.
Until you are in that scenario. And I mean, I was in that scenario where I knew my equipment and my decision making had to be correct.
Yeah.
The bilge pumps had to work. The motor had to work. My stuff had to be tied down. Everything had to be working, because if one of those things goes wrong, that's how you end up in trouble.
Yeah.
And you don't realize how important it is until you rely on it and say, okay, we got 2.5, 3 foot of water in the boat. Let's the bilge pumps, the dual bilge pumps. I took one over the front. The graphs didn't break. My trolling motor was still strapped. There's all these little things that are real easy to overlook.
Yeah.
Until you realize how important it is. But anyway, before we go on.
Hang on. Jim in Indiana makes the point. Yeah, you still have the driver error factor.
Right.
Which is true. I mean, you have to learn how to operate your boat in certain conditions.
Absolutely. And I mean, we've seen some very unfortunate things happen in professional fishing over the last couple of years. And the organizations have taken necessary steps as far as limiting where anglers can run, limiting canceling days because of wind. And I think that's all necessary.
Yeah.
And applaud all of the organizations. We've seen what MLF has done with allowing anglers to put in at different ramps to trailer during tournaments. I mean, you can look at it as a purist saying, oh, well, you should have game planned for that wind or not, but man, it's also hard not to look at it and say, so what if you put it in a different ramp? If it means you're safer, if it means a safety issue, you know,
it is a priority. Safety is a priority.
No, and like I said, having been out, sometimes you're going to end up in dangerous situations that you can't avoid.
Yeah.
And you don't realize that you're in it until you're in it.
Well, especially in the springtime when thunderstorms
and the fall time.
So it is what it is. So great news. We're going to have Frank Scalish on Monday, and we will catch up. I know the last time Frank was on, it was one of the most complimentary, commented, downloaded shows that we had.
Kick
so,
butt.
Yeah. Frank on Monday, folks. You don't want to miss that. All right. The other thing I was going to mention, we mentioned his name. We have the U.S. Open getting ready to happen. And by the way, folks, we are going to have the U.S. Open weigh-in live coverage on the Bass Zone.
Are you going?
But we are not going. We are trying something new, utilizing the software that we have, to where the fans can see the weigh-in, and then we're also going to have a post-game show utilizing the same format. So there will be a schedule posted on the Bass Zone. Billy, the man that makes things happen, will be a big part of the post-game show, and hopefully we'll be able to interview some of the guys that have had success at a stingy Lake Mead, where 13 pounds is a monster limit.
Mm-hmm.
Monster limit. So that's coming up. Anyway, we are reaching out. The man that is dominating on the West Coast here lately. How do you say his name?
Ty Au.
Ty Au. All right. We are working on getting him on the show next week to find out really what's going on with him and why so much success.
Yeah, he dominated the Western division of the Toyota Series this year. Won in March on Havasu 26K, 10th on the California Delta. That was the one that Ish Monroe won.
Yeah.
And then won recently on Clear Lake with, you know, he had 60 fished. Dang, the guy fished every single day that you could fish. He fished all 9 days out of the three in the Western Division, and first in the Angler of the Year there. So going to, I assume he's fishing the U.S. Open. He always fishes the U.S. Open, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So he's got the U.S. Open coming up.
So we will get him on the show next week. And then is it back-to-back? It's not back-to-back events for the Elite Series, is it?
I don't know. I need to look this stuff up.
Because you told me yesterday that...
They start tomorrow.
They start tomorrow, but we're still having the watch party...
On Thursday.
On Thursday with September Mark Menendez.
September 30th, Gunnersville.
So they do start tomorrow. Tomorrow's day one. So if you have your fantasy stuff, make sure you get that fantasy plan in place
September
today.
September 30th. And then...
Is Santee after
the next
that?
One is October 8th through 11th. So...
It is back-to-back.
Yeah, back-to-back. And then the next one is the 16th through the 19th. So that's back-to-back.
So the next 3 weeks, we will have three watch parties.
There you go.
All right, with Mark. And Mark does a tremendous job. If you want to take part in the watch party, just drop me an email, mark@basszone.com, and I will send you the link tomorrow sometime, and you can join the party. I think we can have up to 8 people on the screen at one time. 8 or 6, I can't remember.
A lot of grass. Did you see the... You probably didn't see it.
What's that?
John Cruz had a really cool social media post.
What'd he do?
So he's practicing on Gunnersville.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a post. It said 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And there were 5 pictures of the 5 different types of grass you can fish on Lake Gunnersville.
You're becoming like the...
And he said,
grass
can you
expert.
Identify them all? And I could identify 2. So I'm not becoming the grass expert.
What, milfoil?
Milfoil. Let me see if I can pull
Hydrilla.
This up. I'll see if I can pull it up here.
Did he list them, or was it just a tease?
Well, maybe it was on Facebook. No, I think he said, "Can you name them all?"
And then did he put the answers?
John Cruz, athlete.
That would be kind of messed up if he didn't put the answers.
Okay, see, look how cool this is. Name these Gunnersville grasses.
Okay. What's the first one? Hydrilla? Milfoil?
Oh, I knew 3. Eelgrass.
Eelgrass.
I don't know what the heck that is.
They have
Matt Lee's posted on it. He said Swindle calls it Eladia. Oh, Coontail was one.
Yeah. Water willow? Do they have water willow?
Peppergrass, duckweed, water star grass, spaghetti seasonings, pondweed. I don't think that one's hard to find.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Those are the 5, but that's pretty cool, isn't it?
Lots of grass.
Lots of different grasses.
Lots of grass. So, yeah, they kick off things tomorrow. And what's been the vibe so far? Have you heard anything, Matthew?
No. It's just that it's tough. Everyone's posting pictures of them in the grass. I haven't talked to anyone.
Yeah,
because I've been so dialed in, Mark.
Yeah, they. It's going to be kind of a junk fishing thing, but in a different way. In other words, the couple people that I've talked to have said, look, you're going to catch one here, and then you're going to have to go catch one over there, and then you're going to have to go catch one over here doing something completely different, and then you're going to have to go over here to this riprap and fish the grass off the rip. You know, it's just a bizarre tournament because they're doing so many different things, and the bite just is not that great right now.
Cool tournament, though.
Fun tournament to watch.
We talked for years about how we wanted historic fisheries at different times of the year.
Yeah.
That being said, I want to go into this. We talked about
What's
this
that?
Before the show. I'm a bad friend, Mark. We're going into this. We weren't going to talk about it. So we had the show yesterday, and I talked about all my crazy stuff that happened over the weekend.
Fortuitiveness.
And I want to go into this, too, because it's back-to-back-to-back weeks. And Brandon Polinick has come out with an article, and guys have, about how you have to, at some level, be selfish to be successful at a high level. Mm-hmm. And you said, dude, you're living in a freaking bubble. You're fishing your tournaments. You're talking about your tournaments. You didn't even ask me how my bowling tournament went. And I was like, well, I wondered why you were in Texas, but I never even put any of that stuff together.
You're dialed in, man.
So
you're dialed in.
I think we also need to have like a show. If we're talking about some rough water setups, like how we need to have like a psychologist on to it. We've done this before, but to talk about what makes people in individual sports successful.
Yeah.
Because you have some, you got people with a lot of families, you got people who don't have families, you have guys like look at like a Tony Stewart in NASCAR. Like, doesn't that guy like just do racing, more racing, and then he races after that and owns races and does dirt tracks?
Does a lot of racing.
He's got other guys who are all over the place. But anyway, I totally forgot, and you were like, dude, you didn't even freaking ask me how I did it. It was a big bowling tournament, and I like led into it. But it was an interesting comparison, because if you listen to yesterday's show, what Jeffries was going down the path was, would you rather be in a slugfest where you catch 11 pounds or struggle in a really tough tournament?
No, it multiple was, days. It was more about the mental game.
The mental.
It was
when you're struggling in a slugfest.
Yes. And you're standing in the bag line, and you've got 11 pounds, and you look down the bag line, and everybody else has 20, 22, right. 24, 26. And you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I did the exact same thing that they were doing. In fact, you know, John Smith was fishing 100 yards from me, throwing the same Carolina rig. What's going on here?
So if I was an intuitive good friend, I would have led that into something effect of, oh,
yeah.
It sounds like maybe a scenario similar to that played out at the PBA regional down at Waxahachie, Mark.
It was not good.
And that would have given you an opening to go into what happened.
It was not good. I really, really struggled with what happened. With your fortuitiveness, dude, I experienced in two games some of the most unfortunate situations that exist in the game of bowling. Now, for the people out there that understand bowling, I'm just going to say this, all right? In game one, I had three blower 7/10ths, and you'll understand what that is. For the people that don't understand what a blower 7/10 is, it's one of the most unlucky breaks that you can have in bowling. And it happened three times, all right? Meanwhile, everybody out there is crashing 30-pound limits.
Everybody's bowled at least once. So the 7/10 is where they're shaped like a triangle, correct? And the back two corners of the triangle remain standing. Therefore, you have
back
two pins the farthest apart.
But you hit you enter the pocket of the triangle at the proper location of which you should strike if you get a break.
So you got really unlucky.
I got super three unlucky. Three times.
In a tournament where everyone was smashing them.
Everybody was catching 30 pounds, dude. It was going to take between 230 and 240 just to make the cut, to average 230, 240. If you didn't have at least eight strikes in a game, you were behind. And here I am bowling 180 my first game. So after one game, I was done pretty much. So I made an adjustment.
Because you bowl eight games and it's your total pitch.
Yeah. So I made an adjustment, made a ball change. Had to guess when you move to the next lane. Well, I guessed wrong. And I went 2-8-10 back to back. So I was done. It was one of those tournaments. You go out, you weigh in 11 pounds in that first day. You're done. There's no way of making any money. You're done. That's the way it's set up. Okay? So then the remaining six games, I averaged almost 230 and, you know, came back and just got very, very unlucky. Now, as I said on the show yesterday, luck is earned. Right? Luck is earned. I mean, you're doing things to create those situations. Dude, is unluckiness earned? Or is it just one of those things that happen? And that is what I was dealing with from a mental standpoint. Because, dude, I busted my tail to get ready for that tournament and ended up finishing in 50th because of those first two games. It was an 80-pin swing. If I just averaged what I averaged those last six games, I'm sitting in like 10th place.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So mentally, I was comparing the fishing standing in the bag line with 11 pounds. And you look down and you're like, I got five swimmers and these guys are absolutely smashing them. But I did everything that I thought that I could do.
You lost fish.
And I lost 3 8-pounders.
You can't.
So that was really, really hard for me to take, Matt. And I'm pretty mentally strong. Dude, I was pissed. I was mad, you know, and the guy that ended up winning the tournament bowled on my same pair, and he walked up to me afterwards, and he puts his hand on my shoulder, and he goes, dude, you got screwed.
I think it's really easy to look at it. I mean, you can't kid yourself, Mark. You either knew, and this goes for tournament fishing or for bowling, for anything individual. You know when you go in there, if you did everything that you could do to prepare, how you were bowling, if you did the right things, and if it didn't pan out, or if you knew you were setting yourself up to get your butt kicked because A, you weren't good enough, B, you didn't put the time in, C, you didn't practice right, D, you didn't figure out the pattern, like I said, fishing or bowling.
Yeah.
And if it's the first one where you knew that you did everything right and it just didn't, throw that crap in the garbage and move on to the next one.
Well, that's what the Hall of Famer Steve Wunderlich told me, because I was staying at his house and we had a long talk about the mental part of the game, mm-hmm. and just the unfortunateness, mm-hmm. that takes place in certain events. Sometimes that just happens, and it's unfortunate because of COVID that there is a limited number of events. So this was the first one in a year that we were actually able to bowl at the PBA 50 level. So, dude, yeah, it was enormously frustrating. But like, I've got the senior championship this weekend, and then the non-champions championship the week after that in Dallas. So it's either bounce back, you know, put your big boy pants on, forget about what happened, learn from it, and move on down the road and continue the work ethic that you have to go out and catch that 25, 30-pound limit. Mm-hmm. That's what you got
to
do.
And I think that's why, and I'm just going to use it stats with bass because it's hard to figure out the BPT stats here, but you take like what Kevin Van Dam did, and that's what the other professional anglers held in such awe, was how long he went without a throwaway. Like years and years without the, you did everything right, they just came unbuttoned and it didn't work. And then all of a sudden we had like a year where he was human. And he's not, and I talked to you about this before the show, you know, the top guys aren't going to go out there and say, oh, you know, I dumped him, I lost him, I missed fish, all that. Man, remember that year that Kevin missed the Classic, the first year?
Yeah.
The dude like behind stage would tell, you know, people, not publicly, like, dude, I should be in the top five in this thing. Like, I've not, never lost this many fish. I've dumped tons of fish. I'm making the right decisions. And I mean, you look at his finishes, and it's insane how he went so many years without having that happen. But every single other person in every single individual sport just has those events where you're like, I'm good enough. I put in the practice. I had the game plan. It was the right game plan. It just didn't work out.
Yeah.
And I think those are the ones, obviously you can go back and learn from everything.
Yeah.
But I think those are the ones you chuck in the trash can, and it's the ones that you struggle in where you don't really figure it out and you never actually got on it. Those are the ones you can look back and learn from.
Yeah.
Because there's things you did wrong there that you can correct, learn from, and practice. Like I ask you, could you have gone and practiced 7-10 splits for 3 hours?
I mean, wasted time.
Would that have helped?
You know, that's like throwing a spook in February, all right, when there's ice still on the water. It's just, I mean, yeah, you could have some freakish thing happen.
Do you think it could have upped your odds to make one of those 7-10 splits by 1% if you had practiced? Not by 1%.
No.
By 0.5%.
No.
There's literally nothing that practicing a 7-10 split could help.
No.
I find that hard to believe.
It's just a freak thing that happens when you do convert it.
I find that hard to
believe. And all the years of bowling being on television, it's only happened one time.
But is there not a specific point on where you can hit one of those pins that gives it a better chance to shoot across?
No.
So I would have as good of a chance of hitting a 7-10 split as Rhino Page.
Yeah.
A bull. Bull-loney.
Well, if you threw it at the same speed that he did, because that it's all about speed.
I don't buy that. I think you could up your odds maybe 0.1%. No.
But, dude, you make a great point. And you know, we're focusing on these weekend guys, the non-touring professionals or non-professionals or however you want to classify it. Is there a difference in their mental game? You know, the Mr. Rockefeller that we had on yesterday, he seemed like a fairly mentally strong angler in the way that he approached and what he did, mm-hmm. in a very, very tough grind of an event that he ended up catching 13 pounds, and he stuck with that frog and he had confidence in what he was doing and was really mentally strong in that game. And is there a trend across the country in local and regional areas that the guys that rise up have a better mental game than an actual physical game?
Off the top, I would say guys who fish a lot of changing, tougher conditions. Like, so like we're about to have Nick Trim on, right? Yeah. You look at the BFL schedule that he's fished for the past decade. He's fished pretty much all the BFL's last 5 or 6 years. He's got like 35 of them. But yeah. They're all on the Mississippi River out of different pools.
He knows that lake very well.
Well, it's a river.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry.
Which those I pools. Would imagine that those pools change a lot on a tons, like floods. Based on floods and flow and grass and weather conditions and how it all. So yeah. Like a guy who's going out on something that's always changing and local, I think would have to have a really mentally tough game to trust himself to make all the changes and know that he's going to miss it a lot, because typically there's going to be one or two things that are going and a bunch that aren't.
Dude, I'm going to tell you this right now. A huge, huge part to the mental game is confidence.
Yeah.
Like you're feeling really confident right now, aren't you? You really are.
I would say really confident, but I mean, I expect to catch a limit when I go out, which means I'll probably zero the next one.
Well,
but,
no, that's part of the confidence factor of which you feel mentally the decisions that you're making are the right ones.
Talk about how I feel confident, because that's how you don't catch them. Let's move on from that. Keep going.
All right. It's going to be interesting to see across the country, though, whether or not the guys that rise up in the local areas. Yeah, I know experience and time on the water and the HFA and all that is important, but do they have the mental game that makes them better than their competition?
I would feel it's really hard to have like supreme confidence in the Illini division of the BFL. I mean, you're just like, you know, it's just tough. Like if you're fishing super tough, but maybe you have the supreme confidence that you're a grinder and you can catch them in the tougher conditions. So you're even more confident than the guys who always go out and fish fisheries that always catch a limit on.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you know, last night, Chris Prather made his debut on Fox Sports
with the Strike King logo.
With the Strike King logo
that you brokered,
and this was cool. Me and the Hall of Famer Steve Wunderlich sat and watched and broke down guy's game, and he actually kind of coached me while watching these, you know, guys that are the best in the world.
Huh, that's cool.
Which is really really cool. And could you apply that? Mm-hmm. To fishing. We'll get into that
real quick. The bait man says the guys that are at the top level don't watch YouTube or listen to Doc Talk. That is not true. I've been with guys that are top 10 in the world that prepare for tournaments by watching YouTube. It's public information.
Yeah.
They can look at all that stuff. You would be shocked if you were a YouTuber and you have stuff out on fisheries that the top level guys are going to. There's a good chance that guys who you have like their autograph on the wall have watched your stuff. I'm serious.
Yeah, no, I can't really disagree with that. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with Nick Trim here on a Tuesday. Everybody, stay tuned.
Fishing system starts with Lowrance HDS Live. The best fish finding tools, from Chirp Sonar and Fish Reveal to side scan and down scan imaging, and complete touchscreen control from your trolling motor to your big motor.
We've paired one of the most iconic hulls in the history of bass boats with a proven lineup of trusted accessories. We're bringing you best-in-class value and performance, leaving others in your wake. Turnkey value, turnkey performance. The Pantera 2 is an overachiever in the 19-foot category. Once you hit the throttle, you'll feel the rush, and there's no looking back.
Kevin, what are you doing here?
Oh, I'm just filling in for Billy.
I need 660 shad crankbaits in the Series 5 model.
We're out.
You're not out. You got all kinds of them right there.
We're out.
Kevin, I need six.
Have a lollipop.
I do not want a lollipop.
Have a lollipop.
Do you have it in sexy shad color?
All of us on the Pro Tournament Trail use Gamigatsu hooks.
Why?
Because they are absolutely the best.
It's not about how many bites you get.
It's how many you put in the boat.
Gamigatsu makes hooks for every fishing style.
We didn't come this far to lose fish.
Did you?
For more information, visit gamakatsu.com.
The Big Bite Baits Kamikaze Swim On is a very unique bait, and it's got a full body, but with ribs to give it a bigger profile, but not more plastic. It's got a jointed tail that gives it a lot of action, as well as this up and down crawl type trail with holes and ribs in it, so it creates a bubble trail almost. This bait is supposed to be fished upside down or vertical like this on a great for a chatterbait. I prefer it on a swim jig as well, but you can also cut it down and put it on the back of a finesse jig. You know, flip it around for some spotted bass or flipping docks. Anytime you want a small, compact, you know, little trailer for it, this is great for it. So check out the full lineup of swim-ons at BigBiteBaits.com.
At Duckett Fishing, we have assembled the top pros in the country to help us design rods to give you a competitive advantage.
Castability, strength, durability, action, sensitivity, weight and balance, and consistency.
Combine that with the best warranty in the industry, and you have rods that are pro-driven.
Duckett Fishing, pro-driven.
Blue Water by TH Marine. Offering LED lighting solutions for your boat, trailer, truck, ATV, and so much more. Engineered and built to be rugged with waterproof and submersible options. Designed for easy installation, Blue Water is available in a variety of colors and styles. All backed by a limited lifetime warranty. Blue Water by TH Marine.
All right, we are back on a Tuesday. Don't forget, if you want to take part in the watch party on Thursday with Mark Menendez and myself, please send me an email, mark@basszone.com. We will hook you up. Mark does a great, great job. And this time it'll be cool because we'll have one day in the books, Matthew.
Yeah.
So hopefully they'll have cameras on some of the leaders. And in case you don't know what the watch party is, Bass has allowed us to capture the live feed and simul stream as we do BTL, to where Mark actually kind of comments and gives his take on what we're watching live on Bassmaster.com. And I don't know if it's going to be on ESPN2 or not. Have you seen?
Have not seen. He'll know all five types of grass that are in gutters.
Well, you do. Now you do. Thanks to John Cruz.
Yeah.
Did he give the answers? He did give the answers.
I don't know. There are a bunch of people that were answering, but it's on his Facebook angler page. Right. So it's really cool to go look, like I said, the five different types of grass that you can find in one lake. It's actually crazy that many different types of grass grow underwater aquatically. Like, it's just nature's pretty cool like that.
Nature is pretty cool, man.
Five types of grass in one lake. And then you start wondering, I mean, it kind of starts to make sense. I mean, you talk about all that habitat, all that cover. Like, how can hundreds of anglers every day for 365 days a year fish a fishery and you're still catching fish on a regular basis? I mean,
it's
big
an
deal
amazing
of it
place.
Is the variety of grass in the cover.
Yeah. All right. It is time for our special guest today as we continue our feature on focusing on the non-touring professionals, non-touring anglers. And we want to welcome in the man that got it done on the Mississippi River, I believe Pool 7. I could be wrong
no,
on that.
No, well, I think they took out, let's see if he shakes his head, they took out a Pool 8 and he locked to Pool 7.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so Nick and I know about locking on the river.
It was in Pool 7. All right, let's bring him in. Nick, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me this morning.
Yeah, very cool. What are you, at work now? Taking care of a little business?
I am. I just got to the office a little while ago, but I'm happy to be with you guys for a little while this morning. And this is a new experience for me.
You didn't quit after you won?
Well, he won six grand.
Yeah, dude, he won 16 grand at FLW. Just make the jump.
Yeah, I don't think my BFL stats are going to support my family.
All right, man. Well, we greatly appreciate you taking time out. Let's get into it already. And I am fascinated and really want to hear about the fact that every single fish that you weighed in was caught on a spook. What happened?
Tuesday before the tournament, I went out and I got kind of dialed into something, and it felt like it was right. You know, like when you find that magical pattern and you feel like you can just run it everywhere. And I started running up and down pool 7, and I could have ran it on 8. I could have ran it on 9, but I live 3 minutes from the water on pool 7. So I just put in there, and I continued to run that pattern all 3 days of practice that I had. And it just kept putting out big fish. I mean, you know, I was catching like 15 to 17 pounds in just a few hours every day. Ugh. So, I ended up switching it off, and you told me to bring this in. So
yeah,
I got it here. But I switched to this bait here, no hooks, for the last 2 days. And I just ran around, and you get a good look at them. You know, day one, I had a 5-pounder that I know touched this bait in practice, and I ended up getting him on day one, which was actually the fish that pushed me over, you know, over the 18-pound mark. And I quit fishing after I caught him after about 2 hours, 2.5 hours, and I didn't beat on anything because I knew I might need it for day two. And day two ended up being a grind where I did need a lot of those fish that I could have definitely stuck trying to upgrade on day one. So yeah, I mean, the guys that don't practice, the guys that throw hooks in practice, this is a lesson for it. I mean, don't stick them when you're a few days away from the tournament. It pays dividends.
All right, now, Matt, I know you have a question, but I want to ask him this. Now, here in Oklahoma, I've seen a lot of guys, and I have actually done it. They keep the hooks on there, but they either clip them off or they bend them. Do you get a different action, in your opinion, without the hooks that you would get if the hooks remained on, either clipped or bent?
Yeah, oh, definitely on certain baits. If I'm practicing with a jerk bait, you know, I definitely fold them over because the weight disbursement's different. On a spook, I don't think it makes that big a difference, to be honest with you. The spook might ride a little higher in the water, but it still acts the same. The fish still fire at it the same. So, but certain baits for sure, definitely fold the hooks over.
Is that a saltwater spook? Or just a super spook? It looks like one of the big giant super, it almost looks like a saltwater spook.
It's just a super spook. I don't know exactly what they call it. It's bone with like a silver scale on it. And I take all the hooks off them anyways. I'm not a fan of stock hooks, and the Berkeley Fusions have been amazing. Chris Grohl turned me onto them last year when we were traveling for the Opens, and I kind of took it as, well, he's Berkeley guy, right? But I tried them out on Smith Lake, and man, they just stuck to them. And ever since, that's what I've put on all my treble hooks. I throw the Berkeley Fusions.
So that was in pool 7. It took out of pool 8. There are 100 guys in here. I mean, you're dealing with Tom Monsoor, Kate Loffenberg. There are a number of local guys that are really good that fish this tournament. Was it so good that you thought, well, God, 5 guys are going to find this pattern and we're just going to be fighting over the wing dams? Or did you know that it was something a little bit sneaky?
You know, I had another angler try to start with me on my starting spot. And then he was actually on my next best spot when I got there. So there was definitely other people that had it, but I think they were so keyed in, and I couldn't tell what he was throwing, but I know he was just casting and chucking and whining. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a spook. And I think they were just so dialed in on the spook that if you weren't throwing it, I mean, I had 2 rods on my deck.
Oh, wow. That's a good feeling. Did you run him off? You said he tried to start on your starting spot. Were you like, hit the road, Jack?
Yeah, I stayed in between me and the dam, and I kept moving up and down with him as he tried to get above or below me. And eventually he got mad and just left. But it was a magical spot, and mm-hmm. I didn't want him with me. And day one, I only got 3 of my fish off it, 3 of the fish I weighed, but I had the whole pool kind of dialed in. I think I fished every dam on pool 7 in the practice. So
real quick then, and I'm sorry I'm not 100% tuned in with the diverse ecosystem of the Mississippi River, but do they have big gizzard shad there? I mean, that thing, I mean, in Oklahoma, when we throw it, it's like, oh, we're around the 5 to 7 inch gizzard shad and we're seeing the big fish come up and eat it. Like, what the heck is that thing imitating, or is it just something that's pissing them off? And did you have largies or smallies?
I had all smallmouth both days. We get golden shiners on the river. I was throwing a smaller bait when I first started practicing. I caught like a 4-pounder and it coughed up this like 6-inch golden shiner. And I'm like, okay, it's time to throw something a little bigger. And when I threw that spook gun, it was game over. I mean, they would attack it so viciously, that I knew that was all I really needed to throw. You know, and you said something earlier about the fish in the Illini division. I thought that was kind of comical because we had a bunch of guys.
I mean, I wasn't ripping on it. I have all the mad respect for the guys who fish Shelbyville and Red to the Ohio River and that.
It's brutal.
Anyway.
Well, you said a couple things, and you were talking about confidence and the river changing every hour. I mean, they pull water. They stop the water. The river can change by the hour. And Tom Mansour has alluded to that a few times on stage. The guys that come out of the river division, the Great Lakes division, they're good. I mean, we had two guys win Illinois events this year. Mike Brigham and Cade Loffenberg both went down there and fished the Illinois division so they could make the regional here in La Crosse. And they both won an event. That's amazing.
Yeah.
The guys are just real versatile here. We change, you know, with the conditions. You have to. Very rarely to practice line up with tournament day.
How many guys locked?
Fish move. I think there was about 20 of us in there. It was kind of a squirrely morning. There was a barge in the lock both days, and the first day, the barge was in there till I don't think I got through till 8:30. So I just hung out on top of the pool because I knew I wanted to get in there as soon as I could. And I think there was 20 or 25 boats probably locked through.
So Matt and I have had the discussion about a lot of the local regional guys don't want to give up the juice because they fish so many local tournaments and it supplements your income if you do quite well. What are your thoughts on that? Do you have a problem giving up the juice? Obviously, you're showing us the spook and everything, but what are your thoughts on that, Nick?
I won't say exactly where I was because I think location is everything. The bait is the bait. I mean, there isn't a guy in that tournament that didn't have a spook on their deck. I'm sure of it. Everybody knew they were eating it. I don't know if everybody knew how critical it was that you threw it. You know, like it was a tournament winning bait. And I don't know if everybody realized how important it was, but everybody throws it. So I'm okay with giving that up. As far as like specific locations, that's something that I don't want to give up. I mean, dams is anybody could go out and figure it out, but they were in key locations on those dams. We're at all time low for river, or not all time, but historically low. You know, we haven't had water this low in 5 years, 6 years, so we're not used to fishing this. It's in the fives, which is pretty shallow. I mean, last year we maybe touched 6-something for like a few days, and then it went back up to like 8, 9, 10 feet. It's we haven't had water like this for a long time.
Wow. All right. Throwing that spook, execution wise, how many fish did you miss? Did you bring in everything that you hooked up? What was your hookup ratio like?
Day one, I caught everything that bit it. Everything that bit it.
Smallies on the spook. Perfect execution.
You know, when you're reeling them in and they got that front treble in their mouth and the back one's hooked in their gill, you know, they're smashing it. And that's how it was on day one. Day two, it started out good. And then I caught like 13.5 pounds early and I was scared. Like I knew I was vulnerable with 13.5. And I ran around for like 2.5 hours. I went to my best dam twice, didn't get them, never saw a fish, didn't think that, I mean, it, like they didn't exist. I ran all of it like 3 times. I went back to my best dam at like noon, and they were on fire. And the water is really clear right now. I see, I throw my spook out there and I see like two and a half pounders underneath it. And then I see this big, like 4.5 come up and look at it. And, I told my co, I said, there's a giant underneath my spook. And all of a sudden he nips at it and he gets the back hook. And I lost him halfway to the boat, and then I fired back out kind of out of spite, and I was mad. And, a three and three quarter, which is my biggest fish of the day, just smashed it. And, I caught that, settled me down a lot, got me to like 15 and a quarter. And then I ended up going to one of my other spots and I caught a, another 3.25 that got me up to the 16.2 that I weighed in.
So when you had 13, oh, sorry. When you had 13, you never like pulled a Ned rig out, thought maybe let's throw a tube. I mean, you just said I'm spooking all day.
I have never weighed a fish on a spinning rod on the river. Let's put it that way.
Wow.
I stuck to my guns. I knew it was a timing deal. I knew if I could hit the right dam at the right time where a school of shad went over their head or whatever, that I could get them. I knew they were there. My co-angler didn't believe me, but I had all the confidence in the world that they were there and I could get them if I timed it right. So I just kept grinding.
Hey, Jim in Indiana wants to know, did your co-angler catch him?
My co-angler had one... 1 3.5 pounder. So when I was spun out with 13.5 pounds, I had this largemouth, this sandbar that had largemouth on it a couple weeks ago, and there was a few hanging around. And I had one blow up on my spook, and I thought it looked like a 2.25. So I told my co-angler, I said, go ahead. And he's like, you want me to throw it your blow up? And I said, yeah, go ahead. And he catches it, and it was a 3.5 pounder. And I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, geez.
And then I was really spun out, you know, but. Shortly thereafter, I caught the 3.75, which really helped. But my co-angler both days only had one fish. And day one, I actually cut my spook off, gave it to my co-angler, and he threw it up there, caught a 2.25 on his first cast. And I said, okay, now give it back. We're out of here.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I wouldn't mind drawing Nick.
No. Hey, Andy in Indiana wants to know, who are some of the guys in the Great Lakes region that are good enough to be out on tour?
Oh, man. Well, obviously Monsieur, who is doing it. And then, you know, one guy really comes to mind, and that's Mike Brigham. Pat Schlapper, I know he's making a run at it this year. He's doing the opens. He's doing really well in those. But, you know, Brigham and Schlapper are probably the two that come to mind that I think can make it and do good at it.
What are your short-term and long-term goals when it comes to fishing?
I'm just taking it every tournament, one tournament at a time. I mean, last year I fished the Opens, and I wanted to make a run at it. I had a really bad event in Toledo Bend, and they were coming to La Crosse, so I thought, you know, I can always recover, and I bombed La Crosse. So I want to do it for a living. If I was given the opportunity tomorrow, I would jump at it. But there's a lot of, you know, you need the financial support. And until that's set in stone, I'm going to try to do the Opens again next year and try to, you know, see if I can compete with the best. And if I happen to get lucky and qualify for the elites, I'd definitely take the invite.
All right. What's the best part of your game that you have the most confidence with? And what is the part of the game that you really need to work on?
Frog fishing is what I'm known for around here. I mean, everybody expects me to be out with a frog in my hand. That's how I won my first BFL. So frogging's my confidence technique, and probably my biggest struggle is deep clear water. So I mean, I'm a river guy, so when I get on a lake with deep clear water, I kind of struggle with that. But I enjoy fishing it. Spinning rods aren't my thing. I struggle with the finesse stuff. I'm a power fisherman.
All right. So you fish the BFLs. You might be able to help out a lot of viewers. I get a lot of emails and stuff. People like, hey, I'm thinking of jumping in as a co-angler, as a boater. So I want to know, is this a typo or is this accurate? So in 2006, you decided to jump in the BFLs as a co, and it says on your stats that you fished 4 tournaments and never caught a fish.
That is accurate. And that was when I made the decision that I am never doing this again. And I was green. I mean, I had junk equipment. I had minimal baits. And I never really got paired with anybody who's really on them. You know, none of my boaters really did well that year. But that doesn't mean you can't catch them as a co. That's one thing I tell, you know, buddies that ask me about co-angling. And I said, the guys that you're going to be with, they always caught, they caught a fish wherever you're going. So you just got to be better than them and smarter than them. And I mean, I got, there's co-anglers in this area, you know, Rich Conrad, he catches them no matter who he's paired with. He's a hammer on the co-angler side. So he's not getting paired up with somebody who's on him every time. But yeah, that is true. I did fish four events and never caught a fish.
Okay, I was just making sure. So you go from that, and then you start fishing like one event a year for the next 5 years on the lacrosse pool. And you do okay on that. And then you start jumping up. You fish two or three a year. And now for the last 5 years, you've fished all the events. You've won two of them. You've won approximately $15,000, $16,000, made the regional the last 3 years in a row. So a really natural progression of literally not catching a fish for an entire season as a co-angler to now winning a couple, making regionals,
yeah,
multiple top tens. That's a really natural progression over a 15-year period.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got into the game late. I mean, I didn't get introduced to tournament fish until I was 18. We fished out of a buddy's 15-foot flat with a 25-horse Evinrude. And if we caught three or four fish in a day, we thought we were smashing them, you know. So I got started late in the game, and I never had a mentor. I never had anybody to show me, you know, this is what's going on. I always thought guys had secret baits, you know. That was when Jimmy Johnson was in his prime, and I'm like, dude, he's got to have some bait that I've never seen before. Like, there's no way he can catch them like that. I had to basically learn on my own, trial and error, and just kind of figure it out. So it took a long time, and it does, especially on the river. But I feel like I got a pretty good grasp on things now. And, you know, I was in sixth day one on Smith Lake down there in Alabama last year for the Open. And so I feel like I can do it anywhere. Mm-hmm. I feel like I have a good understanding of fish and what they do throughout the year and how to catch them. So we'll see next year. I'm going to try the Opens again and see if I can compete.
There you have it. All right, man. It sounds like very dedicated to the game, and you're a hard worker. I'm curious, when you get ready to prep for a tournament that's not on the Mississippi River, are you a YouTube guy? Do you try and search and find all the information that you can get on a body of water? Do you spend a lot of time? Is that part of your routine, doing research?
Yeah, I do. I read a lot of forums, watch a lot of YouTube videos. YouTube kind of lays it out there. And you alluded to it earlier. Yeah. You can search by time of upload, and most people upload these things right, you know, pretty quickly after they do the fishing. So you can really narrow it down. Even if they don't say what time of year it was, you can kind of figure it out. So YouTube's been really helpful. I also have a really good network of friends from all over the country, which I think everybody who's successful does. You know, just having a network and people can kind of give you ideas of what they should be doing, or what they've been doing, or what they did in the past that worked for them. Give you an area on a body of water, you know, because a lot of times if you can just dumb it down and take an area of that body of water that you know can be productive and figure, learn as much as you can about that one area of that body of water, I think it helps a lot. So
preach. Keep preaching,
I have
Nick.
To laugh about that, because that's kind of the model that Matt has really kind of put together the last couple of years.
I can't compete against Todd Castledine on Sam Rayburn. But I know there's 5 4-pounders in this cove, and I can learn this cove really well. Yeah. And if I have nowhere else to go, I can try to catch those 5-pounders. And he can catch 20 pounds all over the lake. But if I can somehow figure out how to catch 20 pounds out of this little cut, we tie.
Yeah. Yep. I'm a firm believer in that. You spend way too much time running around if you try to fish the whole lake, and if you can just try to learn as much as you can about a certain area, you know. It's helped a lot.
We might be built the same. Like, I'm one of those guys where I've had it where, like, if it's not going well and I've got a spot 30 miles away, we're freaking going. But if I don't know what's 30 miles away, I don't know where to go, so I'm not going. So I make sure that I don't have anything else, because if I've got it, I'm going to start running.
Yep.
That's funny. Where's the regional at? this year?
Table Rock.
Oh.
So I've been doing a lot of research and trying to figure out what I can about Table Rock. I've never been there. I have fished the Ozarks a handful of times. So hopefully it fishes somewhat similar. I know they got deep cypress tree or deep tree tops and stuff in that
cedars.
Lake. That cedar trees that yeah. play a factor. I don't know. It sounds like we're going to be down there at a pretty tough time of the year. The water temp's probably going to be somewhere in that lower 60s, which is kind of the transition time, and it seems to fish really tough. So historically, I think, you know, 12 to 14 pounds is a good bag down there that time of year. So I'm just going to keep my head on straight and see if I can grind out that 12 to 15 pounds a day. And
We're going to ask the same question. Yeah. Ask it, Mark. Ask what he's familiar with. Does he ever throw a...
What?
The spook.
What? Yeah, I think he knows how to throw a spook.
Yeah.
But I was going to ask him, how many spinning rod and reels do you have?
Oh, boy. I have four.
Okay.
I have four that I keep in my little... The Phoenix has that nice little passenger rod area that I keep in there, and I never get them out. So, but I have four. Is that going to be a player down there?
There's a lot of stuff. It'd be an Alabama rig, a topwater, a whopper plopper, crankhead, jerk baiting, small swim bait, spinning rod, a spoon mine play.
There's a lot of stuff. Dude.
Yeah, you'll catch it. It's a very fertile.
When are you going to be there?
October. The tournament starts October 22nd. I'm going down the 16th.
Oh, it'll be.
It should be pretty good.
The water will be way below 60 by then. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, you just need to throw an Alabama rig. Don't even get anything else ready. Just tie on an Alabama rig and go to town. Bring a bunch because they'll get stuck in the top of those cedars. You'll end up breaking off a lot of them.
Hey, Jason in Kentucky has a question on the instant feedback. He said, how did you develop your network? And I'm going to ask another question that ties into that. Is it kind of like Matt's hub and spoke? In other words, you kind of develop it locally and then it just kind of spreads out.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with being in lacrosse, the lacrosse area, and all these, you know, since we got all this recognition with the elites here about 6 years ago for the first time, and then, you know, all these big tournaments keep coming here. A lot of clubs are doing their championships here, and I have buddies who fish clubs from here and there, or know somebody, and they say, hey, get a hold of Nick. He'll kind of show you around, you know, where to run, whatever. And then they know somebody, and it just kind of, you know, you help one guy, one hand washes the other, and they're willing to help you, you know?
Yeah.
How often do you wander down to that bar district there in La Crosse?
Well, I'm 38 now, so it's been a while since I've even been down there, but I spent a lot of time down there in my early 20s. Let's put it that way.
Best place to get cheese curds in La Crosse?
Ooh, Houghton's. Right down by Viterbo, they have big square cheese curds, and they're like real ones. They're not frozen. They're the real deal.
Those are two important questions. So, by the way, Vanessa said she's very proud of you. She's watching you at work.
Well, hi, hon.
There you have it. Well, I think it's cool that we're recognizing a lot of the successful local and regional anglers across the nation.
We went two for two this week.
Yeah, you've been a great guest. It sounds like... it definitely going in the right direction, hard worker, and wishing nothing but success on down the road, Nick.
I appreciate it. Hopefully we get to talk again.
Yeah, that'd be cool. All right, man. Best of luck to you, and good luck at Table Rock.
Thanks, guys.
All right, man. See you.
Bye.
All right. Cool dude, man.
Yeah, I mean, he knows what's up. Like I say, he fishy opens.
Yeah.
Fish a lot of BFLs.
Can you imagine weighing in that many smallmouth on a spook?
That would be so cool.
Oh, my gosh.
And know you're dialed and then you have a chance to win.
Matt.
That's your dream.
You know, how many tournaments did you hear, even local and regional and national? How long has it been since a national tournament was won?
Exclusively?
On a topwater. Zell?
Jamie Hartman last year on Gunnersville. That was primarily a topwater.
Yeah.
That was cool.
But, man, all smallmouth.
Yeah. And the hook to land ratio was pretty dang good.
That never happens.
And you could see them come up underneath it.
Oh, that is a crazy, crazy win. But Dude definitely has his act together and very polished and did a great job.
I learned some stuff there. But could you imagine how easy it would have been for him to be like, Derby fishing's not for me. 0 for 4? Like, I thought it was a typo. I was like, oh, they don't have it updated to that. But
I could have had a bad draw, man.
That's what I'm just saying. I'm using that as an example of you can get your teeth kicked in for a long time as long as you're learning, as long as you're progressing. Man, that's valuable stuff back then that you can look back and, like he said, I didn't know what I was doing. I had cheap stuff. I thought it was magic baits. I didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, now he's won twice. So hey, I stick with it.
I see his point. You know, he kind of gave up the juice, but he's not going to give out details of the structure that he was fishing. And there's nothing wrong with that. I've said it a zillion times. Harold Allen, the legend, was one of the best in the history of telling people what was going on.
Without saying anything.
Without telling them what's going on.
I told you I had a college tournament on, it was Sam Raber back in there.
Yeah.
He said, run to the mid-lake and fish wood.
Well, I kind of...
At the time, I said...
Centers it down there.
Thanks. I called Chip. I said, dude, we're going to go flip stubs to the mid-lake area. He's like, okay. We get out there to the mid-lake area. And I was like, God, Harold played me.
Yeah. There's a billion. I remember back in the late 90s and early 2000s on Grand Lake, and I think it still happens, where the winner would always say, well, I caught my fish in the mid-lake area on...
A spinnerbait.
On structure.
On a spinnerbait.
Yeah.
There's a spinnerbait in the mid-lake area.
That's it. Every single tournament. Yeah. Didn't matter. You know what was funny is probably 80% of the time that was actually how they caught them.
Yeah. I thought it was also interesting that he found the area and the best way to catch them. And other guys found the areas, but didn't have
the bait. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's so hard to win. I was just talking with someone about how hard it is to win.
It is.
And I mean, like, obviously there's another guy who had the winning pattern, but wasn't dialed in on the spook.
Yeah.
And he had both, and his timing and his rotation were right.
Yeah. Have you seen that spook with the silver sticker? Because what that is, that's a decal. I thought it was a saltwater spook, too.
That's what it looked like, the saltwater spook with the big, heavy O-rings. The one that I use that looks like that is Oaky Shad. It's kind of translucent, and it's got the chartreuse on the top of it and the little kind of opaque white on the belly. Yeah. It's kind of clear on the sides.
Yeah.
When I throw the super spook, I like that Oaky Shad color.
You know, we hear people talk about that they use bass tackle and bass lures to catch saltwater fish. Mm-hmm. But how many people, and have you ever experienced actually utilizing saltwater baits or saltwater lures to catch bass? Have you ever done that?
I know, and I don't know if it's saltwater. I think a lot of the guys use saltwater fly hooks for like Nico rigs and drop shots and stuff. But now you're seeing a bunch of the companies kind of incorporate that and becoming bass hooks. Yeah. But saltwater lures for bass, there's a lot of them that I've seen that I've been like, ooh, that would work, but then I don't. But I'm sure there's a lot more crossover where it's readily available down in the coastal areas.
You know, the
Carolinas,
shad, the kind of sassy shad looking baits. Mm-hmm. The other thing is there's a lot of the top waters that I think would work. And then the bucktails.
Yeah.
That are not bucktails. They're something else from a saltwater perspective. And they have that ginormous silver hook in them that you're just like, how are you going to, you know, how's a fish going to hang on to that? Because it's not the greatest looking
hook.
What
did Bernie Schultz say that he was using? Didn't we have him on and he said he was using some saltwater lure for the smallmouth?
So.
It was like a suspending something or other.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always cool to go through the saltwater section at Bass Pro Shops and just kind of look at some of the stuff there.
As I said, when I go down in Florida, I'm like, that would work. That would work. There's some sort of like squid that I always see being promoted on. I probably shouldn't even say this. There's some sort of squid-like lure that I see being promoted on Instagram. I've sent this to guys.
It's a ocean lure?
Yeah.
Saltwater lure?
And it's got lead in the head, and when it falls, it like ripples on the side and it looks down. I said, dude, that looks like a freaking gizzard shad.
Huh.
And I could see on the ledges when they've seen the hair, they've seen the spoon, they've seen the plugs, they've seen the worms,
probably
they've seen the jigs, stroking the squid.
Ah, Matthew, stroking the squid. Next time you're in Bass Pro Shops, is that where you get them?
You have to order them.
You have to order them?
I can't. I don't even remember the name.
You need to show me a picture of that.
But I think they come in like, I think you could get like an ounce. And stroking I could see it out squid. There on the ledges where you pop it up and then ripples on the way down. Yeah. And it, you know, it looks just like it.
It could. All right. Great show. I want to thank Nick once again for taking time out. And most of these guys, obviously, they have full-time jobs. They're out there earning a living for their family and still having a tremendous amount of success.
Yep.
From a weekend perspective. Hopefully, I think the fans, the last two guys, the first two guys that we've had on, I think you could actually learn some things from what they've said about their wins. Yep. Agreed, man?
Yeah, 100%. As far as putting a pattern together, realizing what it is, both of them said that they really didn't run around. They stuck with one thing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't easy for either of them, remember? You know, yesterday and today, they both had where it was like, yeah, this isn't going great, but they stuck to their guns. One with a frog and a ribbit.
Yeah.
Nick with a spook. I will also say that of all the things in your refrigerator that I have drank, the Sprite Zero Sugar Ginger is the first thing that's been tolerable. Actually, somewhat,
is it okay?
Somewhat enjoyed that.
It doesn't have any caffeine in it, though. You need your caffeine.
Yeah.
All right. Good stuff. All right. No show tomorrow, folks. We'll be back on Thursday with Mark Menendez and the watch party. If you want to take part, please send me an email, mark@basszone.com. I'll send you the link, and you can be a part of the party, and then we'll take phone calls, too. We figured out that worked, and we have that dialed in. So great, great stuff from Mark Menendez breaking down what's going on Guntersville. And then Monday, a good one. We're going to talk boat setups and anything else that we want to talk about with one of the best shows, best guests that we've had on this year. Frank Scalish is going to make a return to BTL on Monday. So looking forward to that. Matthew, good luck at doing what you're doing.
Real talk. My buddy and I got those squids. Middle of winter, you get wild ideas. Needless to say, we've never even opened the packs.
That's funny. All right, Matt, be safe going where you're going. And Matt will be back on Monday. And don't forget, please leave us a review and a rating on iTunes if you're listening to us on iTunes or any other podcast platform on the replay. That's it, folks. Everybody be safe. Tonight, it is must-see TV. And I'm not talking about the debate. Chris Baither, live on Fox Sports 1. Make sure you check it out, representing Strike King. That's it. We're out of here.